Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
It's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance need the cover of October skies. You know the leaves on the trees are falling to the sound of the breezes that blow. You know I'm trying to please to the calling.
What's up? What's up, everybody? Welcome aboard to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with you on this wonderful Monday of the winding down, the ending of the trading year, as we have about 3 weeks left before it's really over for this year, for 2017. But we do have, unfortunately, a lot of things going on, and I don't think any of them are very good. I think there's a lot of concerns about, the general economy. Again, nobody wants to talk about the debt. And I want to know, how are we going to settle and pay this debt? I don't understand where the picture is going to change. I find it extremely frustrating from a personal standpoint, that knowing that we've got the idiots in charge that just want to continue to pound out and bring more debt versus taking care of it and making us stronger or better. I'm quite confused about that situation. I don't understand why we can't see, as they say, the forest for the trees. We have got a disaster at work here with the amount of debt that is being created. Now, you know, we can look at it, you can look at it any way that you want, but at the end of the day, all right, debt will be the problem. Debt will be the pounding of America. And if you don't think so, you should think again, because the debt is the biggest thing to believe that is here. When you watch and look at it and research history at just how bad things can be. But of course, that does not take into consideration the Ponzi scheme that we see perpetrated on a regular basis, allowing the Fed to continue to print this money or do what they do. And I think that becomes an issue as well. And I think that when you decide that you're going to make these exceptions and ignore it, you're creating a bigger problem for yourself. And that, my friends, I think is the unknown, untold story and why we are in a world of hurt. And even though they want to tell us that we are in great shape and everything is hunky-dory and wonderful, I would have to think that that may not be the case. You know, you can certainly let me know your opinion on that, but I think that there's a lot more problems here. And for some reason, we want to continue to ignore the potential problems. And I think that at the end of the day, will become the biggest problem or the bigger problem as we continue to ignore the potential things that are going to happen. Even though we continue to see a chase for yield and a stock market that are going higher. And I think one of the things we have to remember is that the stock market and the economy are not at all related, okay, at any one given time. And I think that the mistake that we're all seeing and making is we're ignoring the problem that is staring us right in the face. And I think this is a problem from the top all the way down. But again, a lot of it has to do with the con game that has continued to be perpetrated by the House and the Congress with their smiley faces and telling us how wonderful they are and what good things are going to do for us. We all know that they don't do much good for us whatsoever. I can't tell you anything that they have done that I think is that we couldn't have done better without them. I think that is a much bigger problem But of course, as we see things going on, I think you are seeing a revolution, or at least a little bit of a financial revolution, as we see the cryptocurrencies go bonkers. Now, I've written about that for the last, I don't know, few months, saying that I thought that they could go higher, but more saying that the new money that's going there is coming from places that you wouldn't expect. And I think that is a little bit of a competition to gold. But I also think that it's a battle against regulation and the Federal Reserve. And I think that is a much bigger problem at the end of the day that we continue to ignore. And I think that's the sadness that we all feel, is the ignoring of what the problems are. Instead of addressing these problems head up, we are ignoring them. And I don't think that at the end of the day makes a heck of a lot of sense. I think that in itself, the complacency of it all reeks. And of course, as there's an old statement, saying, complacency is the architecture of our downfall. Now, you want to continue to ignore, hey, God bless America. But I think that's the mistake. I think this is why we end up in a major problem, because we continue to try to ignore the simple facts that are right in front of us, that there's a problem. All right. Again, debt. Nobody addressed it. Nobody wanted to address it during the tax cuts. I think that's the problem. I don't see how we can continue to ignore the potentiality of what that is going to create for us. Those are things that I think that become, again, an issue for everyone. But for some reason, we like to ignore the simple fact that debt is a major concern and should be a major concern, because it's going to lead to another market meltdown, as it has done 1,000 times in the past. But why are we not addressing that problem? Why do we choose to ignore the simple fact that debt is not a good thing and there is a problem out there? I think that, to me, tells you and tells us that we have a much bigger problem in play here. And until it's taken care of, we're going to continue to see these problems play out. I don't believe that you can just simply ignore it. I've said this since 2009. You cannot borrow your way out of debt. But yet here we are with the whole world trying to borrow the way out of debt. But the only one who can't borrow money are the ones who need it the most, the small business and middle class. And I ain't that a crock. All right. And that's, I think, something that needs to be addressed as well. This is we have a mess, which is being created by the greatest con artists in the world. All right, our friends in the House and the Senate with their own special slush fund. Hey, we'll see how it plays out. But in the meantime, remember, check out highschoolinvesting.com. That is my program, which I have supported now for 6 years. We are in 300 high schools in which we pay all the bills. The high schools, the schools, the states have no financial responsibility. But we are running out of capital and we're looking to raise some. And of course, you can help us out at Patreon, patreon.com/BubbaTrading. If you'd like to help us out, and of course, for those of you who do, we'll help with a autographed copy of my new book, as well as a special webinar for those who meet certain requirements that we have set for on the website. In the meantime, don't forget to download The Bubba Show every single day at libertytalk.fm, and The Sporting Edge on the weekends, of course, and Bubba's Daily Update, starting to pick up some steam. And of course, you can check it out and you can get it for free, emailed to you every day. All you have to do is go to BubbaTrading.com. And the minute you sign in, up will pop a box. You can sign right up for it and get Bubba's Daily Update every day. We're going to stop by, have a break. We'll be right back with Jane King at the break. Bubba.
Yeah. All right, boys, follow me. Mostly in eight.
Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with our favorite Jane King, Lila Max Media, the Ka-Ching Report, does all this good stuff. And better than GE. She brings a lot better things to life. Jane King, what's up, my dear?
Well, I'm just, trying to, like, digest the food, literally and figuratively, from Thanksgiving. And just looking forward, I think, Black Friday. And, like, the shopping season looks really super strong so far.
All right, so I have a question about the shopping season. Now, you know, obviously when you, well, especially when I was a kid, but when you and I were younger, I mean, there was no, you know, there was a couple of places that might have been open on a Thanksgiving day. Very few, but there was a couple. Now everybody's opening. They can't open early enough. So what counts Black Friday now? Does it count from the Monday when they start advertising the sales, or is it actually the true sales on Black Friday? And do we need to have all these extra hours and have all these extra people work and get to get paid double and triple time for holiday pay? Does it, I mean, obviously it must pay the bills because they're doing it, but in your opinion, does it pay the bills and is it worth being open all that extra time?
Well, you're right. I mean, I've wondered about that too, just the economics of being open on Thanksgiving. Now, my husband, so we did our Thanksgiving at noon. He was going to go to Whole Foods and see if they had any information about their trees. Like, when could we get a Christmas tree this year? And there's a Target right across the street from Whole Foods. And he said, Target's open. I'm going to run over there. So he went over there. He didn't buy anything, but he said, I said, well, how was it? He said, there were a lot of people there. So that was probably 6:30 or 7 o'clock on Thanksgiving night. Now, I know overnight it seems pretty quiet. I come into work at 2:40 in the morning, and on the way here, I drive past the JCPenney's and Macy's on Herald Square, the famous one. And there were a lot of people, like, out, like, with bags, like, shopping, like, big red Macy bags this morning, early. And, you know, it's funny, like, it's this whole scene. Like, there's all these people milling around. There's police. There's food carts. You can grab something to eat. It's just hilarious. But, you know, I think everybody's trying to get an earlier start on everyone else. We got, our son broke our big screen TV. That's another story for another time. But we got a new one earlier this month at PC Richards, which is an electronics store in New York, on a Black Friday sale. And that was probably, you know, 2 weeks before Thanksgiving. So it's just the whole month of November and December are just big shopping year times.
Well, I mean, I think Black Friday is going to now start on December 26th and go for the following year.
Yeah, I mean, who knows? I mean, it's just, I mean, everything, there is definitely more of a push today. Like, I'm getting just emails from every place. You know, and it's so funny. It's not retailers. It is retailers, but it's travel companies. And I got a Black Friday sale on a fintech conference. I mean, everybody is jumping in on this.
Well, I mean, listen, I did a Black Friday webinar. I mean, again, I get it, but I'm wondering, have we, I can't think of the word I'm looking for, but, you know, destroyed the actual, the day itself. And are we hurting retailers in the long run by having them, again, opening? I mean, you know, if you're, you know, like my wife worked at Walgreens. She's a pharmacy tech, and she worked on Thursday, Thanksgiving, and she gets paid 2.5 times. So is it worth them being open to pay somebody? Like, can you overcome all that expense? And I'm wondering, and of course, that is one of the allures of cyber shopping for many. But in your opinion, you know, I think that, listen, I love the online shopping because I don't particularly want to go to a store and I know what I want. I buy it and I know the size. I know everything I need. So I just go and click a couple of buttons. But overall, the lack of people shopping in malls on a regular basis, I think, is actually hurting business more than helping it, because it doesn't only hurt the retailer. Doesn't it hurt the little restaurants that are around and the gas stations and everybody else? So isn't that a big cause and effect?
For me. Well, you know, I think there's two things that as a retailer has to consider. So one is, are we even covering our costs by being open? And second, just the whole marketing, like that whole, like, if you get people in there, then they get more used to the idea. There's something psychologically that happens when you walk into a store. Even if that store is losing money, that shopper may come back, or they may see something else, or they may. So I think what they're trying to do is just get into the American psyche that we're open, we're still here, and people. And there's live shots, there's TV. You know, I've seen everybody has a reporter out at malls or a Target or a Walmart or something today, and so they're getting a lot of free publicity out of it. I think. When all is said and done, it's probably worth it to open at some point on Thanksgiving for the big retailers. And, you know, I mean, I guess we'll see. But they've done it, what, 4 or 5 years now, and they keep doing it. So I think they think it's worth it.
No, yeah, I mean, I just wonder if they're doing it because they're forced to do it because others do it. You know, it's just like, you know, if you go back.
Well, no, I definitely think they're forced. They've been forced by, you know, e-commerce. I mean, yeah, no, they never used to be open on Thanksgiving. So they're this is definitely a response. But I think they prefer not to, but if they're going to stay alive, it's what they got to do.
Well, I know you're about 20 years younger than I am, but I remember when I was a kid growing up. Well, no, I mean, that's about right. But I remember going when I was growing up.
I don't know.
That's pretty close. Anyways, I got a six in front of mine. So, but my point is simple that, you know, when I grew up, you know, the stores, retail stores were only open two nights a week. They were open Monday and Thursday till 9. And the same with the grocery stores. And, of course, car dealers were open 7 days a week because, you know, they weren't open at night. So you had to be able to go. But now everything's open all the time. So is it – and I know that's forced into, but do they do more sales now because they're open so much more? Or are they just spreading it over time and actually making their costs higher? That's something I would be worried about.
Well, I think that would be interesting to see. I mean, you look at the company's earnings reports and that'll tell us, right? I mean, Target, you know, they're not doing as well. Walmart, though, has just been amazing lately. So they're doing something right. I mean, they're tight, you know, for many, many years, like retail was kind of getting a little boring. You know, they kind of made it difficult for some of them to return things. And it's in long lines. It just wasn't a great experience. But they're changing that all around. They have to. So I think this is kind of like so many things that we're seeing right now, just a huge restructuring, trying to figure out their futures. And I guess, you know, only the smart ones will survive.
Well, and the other thing I think is, have you ever bought anything, you know, you call a 1-800 number, you buy something on the phone, you see an ever on a thing on TV, and you call them up and you buy something. You ever done that?
I have done that once in my life. It was a thing called the egg extractor, because I am the one in my family who always makes the deviled eggs, and it supposedly peeled the eggs better than, you know, just doing it by hand. And it's crap. It didn't work.
Okay, but when you get on, they tried to sell you more stuff, right? You were on and they were trying to sell you more stuff.
It was so long ago. I don't even think, like, I did it on the internet. I think I did it on the phone. I don't even remember them trying to sell me anything. I don't even know where that extractor thing is.
Well, that's another story. But, I mean, I think that's what we miss out, too, in the retail business, is that they miss out the stuff that's, you know, the impulse items that you would buy. You're waiting in line, and you see the whole rack of stuff, of cheap stuff, and you buy it. But who knows? So let's talk about education, Jane. I mean, you know, I'm seeing a lot of things going on, and you know, they're now starting to interview a lot of millennials on air and things like that. And of course, you know, they're talking about many of them live at home, which we know. And you are very concerned, as I am, with the education of our youth, because obviously we need people that are smarter about money to run this country pretty soon, because we're running out, as always. What's your thoughts on, you know, what you're doing with your, you know, you're starting at a very young age and getting them done, and how do we get to everybody to be educated and people to buy into the fact that they do need the financial literacy education?
Yeah. Well, we should make this a two-part series, because I have a lot of thoughts about this. My son he's fifth grader, so we're doing all the middle school tours. We just wrapped them up. They just wrapped up middle November. And so I get a chance to see about 8 or 9 middle schools in New York that he's zoned to go to potentially. And I just have a lot of interesting thoughts. So
We'll do that next week, because I don't want to I don't want to cut you off. But
okay,
but
we got a lot to talk about there. Okay, but financial literacy. Okay, so first of all, it's not mentioned in any schools, and I was really kind of disappointed to see that there's a lot of other stuff being covered, a lot of stuff that's kind of questionable in my opinion, but no financial literacy in any middle school. Any middle school would be an excellent time to do that. So. You know, I mean, we just keep pushing through and trying to get people. I do it on TV. I do it through the podcast. We do it through our efforts to try to get people to be smarter about money. Fortunately, we're entering a season where that lesson's not going to get heard very well.
No, we're going to, as we said, they're going to be spending. But
yeah,
Jane King, you are the best. Have a great holiday. And I always enjoy and love having you on. You bring a lot of good things to the show, and you're the best. Thanks so much.
Oh, and thanks. And by the way, you look awesome for being in the 60s.
Thank you, my darling.
I would have thought you were like 5 years older than me. So congrats to you.
Thanks. I appreciate it. And that's our friend Jane King from Lila Max Media, the Ka-Ching Report. And her and I are both in the same boat. We both love to help and educate our youth And we both have the same problem trying to get people to help us because, again, for whatever reason, nobody wants to. But in the meantime, this is The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. And, of course, you can download the show every single day at libertytalk.fm. And you can also get the Sporting Editor. And don't forget to get Bubba's Daily Update, which is you can get at bubbatrading.com. And there'll be a little box, pop it up and sign up. You get emailed every day. In the meantime, we're going to step out here for a break. This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz coming back with Matt Demmer.
Roy, the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba. You ain't listening to me.
What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here. The long-awaited Bubba Report. Bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Cialady, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got The Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report. Welcome back to The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz, and it's time for our expert, our technical expert, Matt Demeter from DemeterResearch.com. What's up, Matt? Happy holiday. Happy Thanksgiving. What's going on, brother?
Hey, Todd. Happy Thanksgiving. Everything's good here. How about yourself?
It's all good. You know, markets are still in the slow dribble, the dull market rally, which, of course, as we both know, markets, when they're dull, tend to rise. Not a lot to think about there. And, of course, you've actually talked about, you know, you believe that there's some more upside coming anyway, so it kind of fits in with your model. And I know that the NASDAQ was, I think, stronger again last week, which has been your call. What are you thinking?
Yeah. NASDAQ still has room to run, I think. And, you know, of the indices, I think, yeah, it has the most upside. So we're going to stay long. I want to add to that if we get a pullback. And you can see there was a breakout at around, I'm talking about the composite here. There was a breakout around 6,800. And we're only at 6,890. But if we get a pullback to 6,800, I'll be buying a little bit more.
Yeah, now I guess you're kind of expecting a little bit of a pullback this week, or a little bit of a consolidation pattern.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, the hourly indicators and the really short-term stuff is overbought. So I wouldn't be surprised just to get a little bit of a pullback, and and into that I would buy, but we're gonna stay away from the Dow, because the Dow, I think, is going to be the weakest going forward. And the commercials are also the most short of the Dow. So we'll go long NASDAQ. And if anything, if we were to do a hedge, it'd be shorting the Dow.
Well, I mean, the Dow is, I mean, if you're correct on your assumption that the NASDAQ is going to be the strongest, that would make sense that the Dow would be the weakest, because the Dow is more, even though it's only 30 stocks, it's more of a safety play than anything else. When people go to the Dow, they're usually rolling out of some of the higher risk assets. Isn't that correct?
Yeah. And, you know, in particular, I'm not looking at the industrial side of it either as doing that great. So, so XLI might be a better hedge even. So,
all right. Well, again, that's, you know, we look at certain things as they go on. And of course, you know, we saw, you know, pretty much some solid movement. You know, we had the 2 week correction is over. You know, we were down 2%. I actually made a prediction. I said we'd get down 3%. We only got down 2 in the general markets. We actually got down 3 in the Russell, and the Russell has now resumed its charge to the upside, which would also be consistent with your read on the NASDAQ. I mean, again, a little bit more of a higher risk play, risk on. What are you thinking about the Russell in here?
I think the Russell, very short term, is overbought. It's at it reached up to a sort of a pivot resistance line that I have, and peaked out there on Thursday, or excuse me, on Wednesday, and then Friday, and I think it's going to pull back. you know, probably it could pull back all the way towards the lows. And, you know, at that point, I'd become a buyer. But the Russell's always is difficult. It's always, you know, it seems to be doing its own thing at all times, basically. But I wouldn't be long right here on Russell. I'd lean towards being short and actually being, you know, long NASDAQ.
Now, how do you account for the commercials being so far wrong of recent vintage here, pretty much across the board? What are you thinking there?
I don't know what to think about it. They're not usually this wrong for this long, and they have been. So, you know, I think probably when, you know, we do get sell-offs, big sell-offs, then they're going to be that much bigger because, you know, they're going to have to recoup, or they're going to try to recoup what they lost. And I think they'll be adding fuel to the fire.
Now, you had made a call on crude, which is turning out to be correct. And I know that you're a little bit shorter than you'd like to be here. But, you know, you did make a call that you expected to go higher, and you're still thinking that 64 level may come into play.
Yeah, I do. So that's, yeah, 64. It's because we just switched over to the January contract a week or two ago. That's, yeah, closer to 65. But, yeah, I think we're going to go higher in oil, and then we'll get a much bigger pullback. But what we were waiting to do is get the breakout level where I saw it was somewhere in the high 54s, and we got a pullback to 55 over the past, I think, the prior week, and that gave us a chance to cover a little bit, and we were hoping to cover a little bit more on just a little bit more of a dip. We didn't get it, and now it's on the verge of breaking another resistance area here, right around 59. If it gets above that, we'll just take a loss on the remainder, or at least a portion of it. I want to keep some short exposure to oil, just because long term, I think it's dead. But yeah, I do think it's going to go higher. I think it's going to go, you know, 64 to 65.
No, I understand that. I mean, I hope not. I don't think it will go there, but that's besides the point. But I guess my question to you is do you follow the backwardation or contango patterns in oil at all? Does that come into any of your charting work?
No, I don't, and I really should. I mean, it's an issue of time. I mean, I'm looking at so many different charts. I'd love to. That's a really good extra information there. I do follow, obviously, what the commercials are doing, and in terms of oil, they are at a new all-time short position. So that's not a bullish sign. That's a very bearish sign. If you think about it in terms of contracts, it's a new all-time short position for the commercials. But if you think about it in dollar terms, it's not an all-time high because, you know, we're at 50 as opposed to 100.
Right.
We're in the 50s as opposed to the 100s. So dollar-wise, we're not at an all-time high, but in contract size, we are. So it's still a very big short position by the commercials, and they tend to get oil right. So,
well, I look at it. I mean, I look at January oil close to 59, and yet May oil is at 58. So that's backwardation, and typically that means there's just some fear pumping it up in the near term, and of course it could push it to 64, but at the end of the day, you know, that will reverse itself out as it always does. I mean, if we go back to July of 14, when oil was like 112 or 114, the December oil then was 90. And of course, you remember we went down to about $18 or whatever. I mean, some ridiculous sell off from there. And again, I'm not saying it's going to happen now, but that would lend me to want to be more bearish than bullish oil myself because of that formation. That's not a solid formation, and that is just telling you that the amateurs are pushing oil higher in the short run here because they're fear. But you know, overall, that the commercials which you're selling me are short, which I think is the correct thing. What do you think?
Yeah, that makes total sense to me. And I hadn't realized that the spread between those months had gotten out that big up at when a few years ago. So no, that's great, and you know, it just fits with our thesis, and that oil over the next, this is more longer run, but over the next 3-4 years, you know, I think oil comes back down into the 20s. So you know, but for right now, yeah. I agree. That's that's a great bearish sign. And, you know, we're going to look to, you know, increase our short position when we get up to the if and when we get to, you know, the 64 area.
Now, I know you've been tracking copper, and copper had a pretty big move up, and you're looking, your number in copper was what, 330 or something like that?
Isn't it 330s? Yeah, I could say maybe as high as 340, but we covered half of our short position late in the prior week, or it was either Monday this past week, and that worked out well because we've had a pretty good bounce. I think that bounce can take us up to, I would say the 340s is possible. But you know, as we talk about it, I'll get a better sense when I see indicators peeking out and targets looking like they're reached.
Yeah, I mean, again, look, obviously we can't pin it down to an exact point. We can try to get an exact level. But, of course, you know, the markets move and they do things, and that's always the case when you're watching them. But, you know, there are good levels, and that's where you have to be willing to sit and stand pat, I guess is what we would say. And, of course, the euro currency now is your 122 back in play here?
I think it might be. I think we get into the 121s anyway. So I think it's going to make it at this point. I kind of been on and off with that, but the fact that it held rising support was pretty key for me. It barely did so, but it did. And then, you know, I'm looking for mid 121s. And then on the flip side, I have support coming in on the dollar index at 91.70, roughly, which would be a higher low than we got, you know, a couple months ago. So, you know, for a while I've been saying a double low, or saying a new low, then a double low. The problem is the support is rising, so it's been changing as we go. But now I'm looking at about 91.70. So that's, you know, that's only about another, you know, dollar to the downside. That may be enough to get the euro to where I'm looking for.
And this is the Bubba Show, and we are with our guy, our technical expert, Matt Demeter from DemeterResearch.com. And I encourage you to check out his website. He's got a lot of great information. And when we come back for the break, we're going to talk a little bit about the crypto world, because there's a lot of bonkers things going on there. But in the meantime, don't forget to download the Bubba Show every single day at libertytalk.fm, as well as the Sporting Edge. And don't forget to get Bubba's daily update. You can get that at bubbatrading.com. All you have to do is sign up for it. We'll send it to you free every single day. This is the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz will be right back with more from Matt Demeter from DemeterResearch.com. The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with Matt Demeter from DemeterResearch.com. And again, I encourage everybody to check out his website. He is one of the smartest technical guys I've ever met, and is no emotion when it comes to these things, which is extremely important, especially when you're looking at products like Ethereum and Bitcoin that are going absolutely bananas. And of course, Bitcoin over 9,000. And Matt, what's driving the Bitcoin? What's going on there?
I think what's happening is people are, you know, you have a lot of new entrants into, there's a lot more excitement around the cryptocurrency space. So you have a lot of people coming in. And the first thing you have to do with a lot of these exchanges is buy Bitcoin. Some of them don't, you know, Bittrex is one example where you come in with dollars or whatever currency you have, and then you immediately convert to Bitcoin. And that, you know, that drives the Bitcoin price higher. From there, you can decide if you want to buy using Bitcoin, whether you want to buy Ether or you want to buy, you know, Monero is another one that I like. But there's a variety of them that you can buy from that point. But you have to buy Bitcoin first in a lot of these. So I think, you know, you just have a lot of people getting excited about the space, and they're coming in, and that's what's driving it. We talked about, you know, futures being traded by the CME and the CBOE. And unfortunately, I'm looking at those, and those are going to be, you know, cash settled. So from my understanding of it, they are not going to be drivers of price for Bitcoin in reality. They're not, if somebody buys a, you know, Bitcoin future contract, then it's not deliverable in Bitcoin. Thus, it's not going to cause buying pressure on Bitcoin itself. So that's a little bit of a disappointment if you really want to see, you know, that part of it push Bitcoin higher.
Well, there is a thing, you know, they've gone over the years, you know, they've gone a long way away from physical delivery anyways in many of the products. So that same pressure, but there's still going to be pressure because if it is a Bitcoin, somebody's going to have to make the Bitcoin somewhat good, I believe. I think that's the difference is many markets have now gone to a cash settlement because the markets are so big now, they can't, you know, force deliveries, but the same squeezes will happen. I think that happens in like, for example, the grain markets. We call them the silo squeezes over time. So I think the same squeezes will appear. I just think that what they did is so that they get more people to play and more open interest. They don't force delivery of things. And I think, but the overall, somebody's going to have to cover that and make it good somehow. And I think that's what we'll see. And again, we'll see how it works out, but I think that will help it. But I think the other thing that we'll do is that brings in some other alternatives into that space. And one of them would be hedging. You know, if you bought, I mean, I know somebody who's got 100 Bitcoins, okay,
right,
that they've been buying. And, you know, it's obviously a lot of money. It's almost $1 million.
Yeah.
Certainly they don't necessarily want to sell, but they would like to figure out a way to kind of hedge that. And I think that's where those indexes will come in as well, which will also create some more open interest and will allow somebody like me to go, okay, well, I can go out and buy some now because I can actually hedge it. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that's a very good point. I mean, if it increases the safety of buying Bitcoin, then you can do more. Sure. Then you can buy more physical, which I think would be great. I mean, you can do this, you know, same thing with gold and silver. You can buy physical and you can hedge it with futures. Anything that helps the overall space, I think, is great.
And I think it will help it. I mean, I know a lot of people are concerned, and certainly, obviously, we don't want the reason that the whole purpose behind the Bitcoin was to have non-Fed and non-government interference in manipulating the currency. But I don't think they can do that through here, because again, it still doesn't change the makeup of it. Now, you know, obviously,
that's actually a really good point. I mean, the fact that the futures are going to be cash settled means that Bitcoin can't be jammed down, you know, using the futures market. So, I mean, at least that would be my thought on it. But I would
agree, because again, with the 24-hour trading and the only free market left, I mean, Bitcoin right now is the only true free undaughtered market here, because it trades 24 hours a day and you can't really control it. I mean, certainly somebody with big money can try to push it, but they can't manipulate the price, I don't think, other than by either buying or selling. And if you're buying or selling by manipulating it, you could be creating a problem for yourself. Now, obviously, its levels are spooky from just a regular charting standpoint, are they not?
Yeah, we've talked about this, the monthly RSIs in the 90s, which always, you know, makes me worried, because it's you see those kind of levels, you know, we saw those levels in NASDAQ 2000. The daily and weekly indicators aren't you know, super overbought. So that's okay. So I'm a little bit, you know, less concerned when I look at those. But yeah, there really is no real way to price Bitcoin, you know, on a fundamental level. So we just, you know, I just look at the charts, and what I'm looking at is that we are probably running into resistance here in the low 9,000s. I have a target in the around 9370, and it's declining slowly. In fact, let me check that. Yeah, about 9370 is about where it is, and it's slowly declining. If that gets popped, then we can push above 10,000, I think.
And it's amazing, and of course it does feel, you know, a little bit bubblish. But again, it doesn't mean that it won't be a good currency. It just means that it's, you know, like any other market, you get so overbought and so much, you know, in, who's going to be left to buy? And of course, but I do think that there's a lot of advisors now playing in this space as well, which I think is also helping to push up the price. You know, I happen to know a few that are actually, you know, putting it in people's portfolio. And again, that does help obviously push the price as well, because an investor isn't going to sit there and actually trade it. They're just going to buy it and look for it to continue to go higher. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, now it's, you know, it's becoming more of a, you know, quote, legitimate asset class. So, you know, for diversification purposes, might be a good thing for investment advisors to recommend it, at least, you know, to put a small amount in it, because anybody that put a small amount into it at any point over the past, you know, year, 2 years, three, whatever, you know, would have turned a very small amount of money into a large amount. Is it going to be the future of digital currency? Could be. I don't think Bitcoin is going to actually serve as the spending money that we use day to day. I think it's going to serve, if it continues to serve its current role, it will basically serve as gold, store of value, and other currencies will be the spending currencies. But it's right now the technology, it was the first one. It's built up the biggest network effects, and it's got the big brand name recognition, so to speak. But there's other currencies out there that will, the transaction speeds far faster, and the transaction fees are far lower. So, Bitcoin used to be very cheap to transact. Like if I want to send one Bitcoin from my wallet to your wallet, it was under a penny. Now we're looking at that getting in the ballpark of a wire transfer fee. You know, we're talking about, you know, $20, $30. So, clearly the promise was that, you know, the transaction costs would be very low. But as Bitcoin gets bigger and the blockchain gets larger, the fees are going up and the speed has been going down. But there's been improvements to technologies through other cryptos that function better for those purposes.
All right, you got 30 seconds left. What I want to know is, is there too many popping up of the cryptocurrencies, and which one do you think at this point would be the spending currency?
I don't think there's too many. I think, you know, we have only a handful that are really competing to be currency. And the rest that are popping up, all these other ones that you hear about, they're usually application type of cryptos. These are the ones that you use. I won't get into that's a separate subject.
That's fine, no problem.
But they're not acting as currencies. Got so you it. Have maybe a handful, like 5, 10 that are really acting at it. One that's fungible that I already mentioned is Monero. It's totally private. It's relatively fast, and I think that one has a shot.
And that has been Matt Demeter from DemeterResearch.com. Matt, as always, thank you so much for being here. Great information on the cryptocurrency world.
Todd, always great to be here. Thanks a lot.
This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. We're with Matt Demeter from DemeterResearch.com. Make sure you check out his website. And, of course, he continues to be one of the experts in the crypto world as well. This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Same time, same station. Everybody have a great day. Thank you so much. We'll see you later. Good night.
Turn the quiet up. Turn the noise down.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.